welcome to episode 141 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perrin Emroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
We got two reviews for you this week. We're going to do a mini review of the movie Manchester by the Sea, and then follow that up with a big review of Disney Animation's latest feature film, It's Moana. First up, though, Manchester by the Sea. Angie, you got that one.
Yep, here is the IMDb synopsis. An uncle is forced to take care of his teenage nephew after the boy's father dies. Completely accurate. So this is the new movie by Kenneth Lonergan, and the uncle is played by Casey Affleck, and the teenage nephew is played by Lucas Hedges of Zero Theorem, and I loved him in this, and he's so good in this, and sorry, I'm going to move on now. And the father is played by Kyle Chandler, and it's just a drama about grief, and I think it's sad, but it's really good. And one of the things that I like about it is that as sad as it is, there are moments of humor, there are moments of absurdity, not like in a surreal way, just in like a kind of like the absurdity of life kind of way. The performances in this are what's getting most of the attention. Like Casey Affleck is incredible. Like I would not, like a lot of people are already talking about like whether he's going to get nominated for an Oscar, you know, not that that's the only reason to appreciate someone's work or whatever. But I really do think that he's a strong contender. But, like, Lucas Hedges, and Michelle Williams, I should say, is also really good in this. She has a supporting role as Casey Affleck's ex. And, like, she's not in it that much, but when she is, she just really just packs an emotional punch. And Lucas Hedges is the other one that I think is just, like, he's a young actor. He was in Moonrise Kingdom as one of the bullies. And then he was in Zero Theorem, and he's in this. And I'm sure he's done other stuff, but those are the things I know him from. And he's someone that I've been watching with interest since Zero Theorem, and I was so excited about how good he is in this. So yeah, I really love this movie. It's really just like it's sad, but it's really also just like empathetic. It doesn't give you any easy answers. Like it kind of has at the beginning, it kind of has a shape of one of those like, you know, a sad thing happened, but love will carry us through kind of like things. But it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah, I pretty much echo everything you just said. I wouldn't say I enjoyed the movie. It's not really a movie you're going to see and come out and be like, oh, I want to watch that again. It's a tough
watch. I cried so much.
It's a tough watch, but as Angie pointed out, it's not something that kind of wallows in its misery, and it's got a very uplifting conclusion, too. And I don't mean uplifting where everybody, you know, runs off into the sunset together, something completely outlandish. Everything that happens in the movie feels kind of grounded and real and like a very realistic approach to this kind of situation. But my biggest takeaway from this movie is undoubtedly the performances. I think there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that Casey Affleck is not. He is getting a nomination, at least. He's fantastic in the movie, and I'm so glad you brought up Zero Theorem, because I didn't really love that movie, but I walked away remembering Lucas Hedges from that movie,
yes,
so I was so excited to see him come up here, and he is really freaking good in this movie, and Michelle Williams as well. Like, one of the scenes that I will never forget from this film is when the two of them meet up outside and, you know, she's walking around with her friend, and I'm not going to spoil anything. That simple conversation is probably one of the most emotional, memorable things in the entire movie. Kyle Chandler is also great in this as well. I don't really have a single complaint about the movie. I think the only reason something like this will likely not wind up in my top 10 of the year is because it is something I tend to reserve a top 10 spot for, something that I enjoyed through the roof to the point where I would watch it again, or something that I was so incredibly emotionally moved by it that I need to see it again. This probably does not fall into that category for me, but it's a fantastic film, and you could just see that Kenneth Lonergan has such a handle on how to direct actors, and I think that's part of the reason that this movie is so damn excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that. Like, it's not a movie that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see it again. But at the same time, like, I was so moved by it. Like, it was, you know, granted I was in the Sundance bubble when I wrote my review, but it was, like, the only one that I gave just, like, a 10 out of 10 too. Like,
wow.
I love this movie. And one of the things, like, you know, you were talking about how it's like kind of uplifting, but the thing is that it's not necessarily that they give you like a, and everything's fine now, happy ending. I think that what I took comfort from it is that it's a movie about grief that really acknowledges the scars that you will never, ever get over. And it, because of the movie, you know, but it kind of also shows you how you can start to make incremental progress and try to move on. It can show it, like, it's about like the other things that are in your life other than what you lost. So even though it's not necessarily just like a, you know, and then like everything was great, like I think that there's something kind of comforting about a movie that just acknowledges how messy and unwieldy and ugly sadness and grief can be. So yeah, this movie, I mean, we should wrap up, but I just want to say, like, you know, go in with tissues, go in knowing that you might be, like, you might be really sad, but it is absolutely worth watching.
I'm very sensitive when it comes to sad movies that leave me sad after I see it. And even though this movie is very sad and will make you cry, the fact that I was able to walk away from it kind of feeling, I wouldn't say hopeful, but, like, maybe a little stronger for having seen someone deal with a situation like this the way he does. I think that's a very positive thing that I will always appreciate about this film. So, yes, there you have it. That's our mini review of Manchester by the Sea. Now it's for the big one, the wide release. Disney's crushing it this year. Did it crush it with Moana as well? Christy?
Talk about emotional whiplash going from Manchester by the Sea to Moana.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I didn't end up going to see Manchester by the Sea solely because I was already in a pretty dark place. And I was like, should I go see this? And everyone was like, no, just give yourself a night off. And yeah, Moana? Come on, guys. So here's the plot to Moana. A young woman uses her navigational talents to set sail for a fabled island. Joining her on the adventure is her hero, the legendary demigod Maui. Yeah, kind of, sort of. That's kind of a crap plot synopsis. But basically, it's about accurate. A oceanic chieftain's daughter who's supposed to lead her people. But then a crisis hits and she has to go out onto the sea and find Maui so that they can save the world. And this movie is just a charm explosion from the first frame to the last. I had so much fun, and I wanted so much from this movie because I loved the animation. I loved the commercials they've been putting out. I love The Rock, who plays Maui. And then they were like, oh yeah, also Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton fame is going to write all the songs. And I was like, what now?
And okay, I just want to point out, there are other people working with him. He's credited with, like, two other people.
That's true. So. It's true, but I just don't want most of the lyric credit. They wrote, like, the music.
He does, but I just want to make sure that
No, that's true. That is absolutely accurate. I feel like I should look up their names, but I'm going to horribly mispronounce them.
Opetua Foley or something, and Mark Mancina. I think I'm butchering the pronunciation, but I know how to spell it.
There you go. But yeah, so Moana, it's adorable. It's beautiful and colorful. And it's funny because the beginning starts off with, like, Baby Moana playing in the waves. And you may have seen that clip online. And that reminded me so much of Piper that, like, I was automatically just like, oh, guys, oh, yeah, remember Piper? But then, yeah, it's such a fun adventure. She's really fantastic as a character. They cast this newcomer whose name I also am terrified I'm going to destroy. I'm not even going to try.
I don't know how to pronounce it, but I know how to spell it again, and it is Ali'i Cravalho or something like
that. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. I should have looked this up before, my bad. But she has, like, such an like, earnestness and brightness to her voice that I was kind of instantly pulled in. And then, like, the story's really fun. But when you meet Maui, like, the movie goes to, like, a whole new level. And he has this song called You're Welcome. It was funny because I remember hearing that The Rock was going to sing, and I was like, does The Rock sing? Because I feel like The Rock has a lot of talents. I was not sure if singing is one of them, and it's not, but what's kind of great about the way they did this song is he kind of does that, like, Shatner sing speak, and it totally works for him.
I have something to say about that. I went to a footage presentation, and Lin-Manuel Miranda did, like, a big Q&A with, like, everyone, and one of the things that he said was that he figured out The Rock's, like, singing range by watching all his old wrestling videos. So, like, it is very purposely designed for someone who is not a natural singer.
Yeah, it's called You're Welcome, and it's basically Maui explaining that he has done so much for humanity, and he's like, you're welcome. But, like, that's how he sings it, where it's kind of like when you're uncomfortable, or, well, I guess when I'm uncomfortable and I sing things where it's like, it's kind I'll be fine. They're like, not really singing.
oh my god.
But yeah, and then it's like we get to a point, and I don't want to give too much away, but like we get to a point where Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords pops up to sing a song called Shiny, and Shiny is my absolute favorite thing that happens in this movie.
I loved that sequence. What is the crab's name? I thought that was the funniest, weirdest thing.
Tamatoa. I know all the names today, guys.
There's something about that sequence that does not fit in this movie at all, but it does at the same time, and it works. It's like a completely different kind of song that doesn't match the rest of the music at all, but it's so mesmerizing and weird and kooky and perfect. Oh, I loved
it. It's like Jemaine Clement does Bowie, like, as a giant crab. It's the weirdest thing in the world.
Absolutely fascinating. There is something just totally hypnotic and mesmerizing. I did not want that sequence to end.
I know.
Other favorite sequence is...
Is it the Mad Max one?
Yes! The freaking Mad Max with cute coconuts. I mean, come on. Well, coconuts that want to kill, but...
They have explicitly said that that sequence was inspired by Mad Max Fury Road. And, like, when I saw it in the trailer, I was like, I mean, I guess. And then when I saw it in the movie, I was like, oh, yeah. No, you can 100% see that.
But it's so much fun. And the action is just so well choreographed, too, where it's like you get to explore, like, the whole expanse of their ship. And there's, like, flipping and flying and all the designs of the different coconuts. Like, I want coconut toys. I want, like, a whole brigade of those guys.
I feel like that won't be a problem. I feel like
those were designed to be easy to merchandize.
There was well, someone in the office the other day referred to them as Disney's minions, which
I certainly see it.
And I would also like to own my very own Hey Hey. I'm a big fan of Hey Hey. I got the biggest kick out of the stupid chicken, and you would think that the whole gag of it being so dumb would get old very quick, but seeing every different character interact with this really stupid bird the entire movie, I thought it was the funniest thing.
I have the world's dumbest cat, and Hey Hey is the only animal that I've ever seen, fictional or real, and been like, yeah, I think that might be dumber than my pet. Like, he is so stupid, but he's so funny. One of the things that I really liked about Moana, too, is that, like, so, you know, it's a Disney movie, so, you kind of know what to expect, like, you know, visually. It looks like Frozen, it looks like, you know, Tangled, whatever. But there's also, like, a lot of sequences where it doesn't look like that. Like, I think the crab one was a good example. Like, there are some parts of it that just, like... You know, it's really, like, mesmerizing. It's kind of trippy. Like, when Dwayne Johnson sings You're Welcome, like, you know, it starts out, like, in, like, the island that they're on, but then it just goes on to this whole, like, fantastical sequence. There's a lot of, like, art in here that looks kind of 2D. Not, like, old-fashioned Disney hand-drawn animation, like, something else entirely. And I thought that added a lot of visual interest to a formula that we're kind of familiar with, the Disney formula.
I actually thought they did a really good job separating it visually from all the other films. I think the only thing that felt maybe a little Frozen-like or, you know, past Disney animation movie-like is just the look of the human characters. It's that if you line them all up, they could stand next to each other and it would look right. I think they did such a brilliant job infusing the Polynesian culture into every single thing that they did, between the songs and the way the characters looked and the way the environment looked. Some of the environment in this movie looks like borderline photo real, but not in an awkward way where they did like in The Good Dinosaur, where it's like one minute it's cartoonish and then it's photo real and it doesn't feel right. It's blended so perfectly in this. And Maui's tattoo, I thought that was some of the coolest animation that I think right there blends the 3D and the 2D look exceptionally well. And what a cool creative touch to add to that character, to add another character to the scenario. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I love the tattoos because it's not just that they move like you've seen a little bit in the trailers. It's actually that they... There's a little tattooed Maui that like interacts with him very silently, and it's like his little Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah, quiet.
Exactly. And it's like there's one part, which one of the scenes I thought was so impressive, is there's a part where his little tattoo hugs him, and it's such a it could have been done that couldn't have read, and you just feel like, what is he doing? But it like reads really sweetly. I loved all of that. I thought that was really beautiful. The animation is amazing, and like Moana's hair, like the way it whips around, it feels like photoreal to a degree that's quite striking, and like it's just visually stunning. And then to just be buoyed by all these amazing songs, like I've been listening to the Moana
songs
soundtrack.
Are so good.
Yeah, the Moana soundtrack is out now. And I bought it. I've listened to it on repeat. I've listened to the demos, because if you like Lin-Manuel Miranda, you also get demos of songs that are not in the movie and demos of songs that are in the movie that he wrote for other people. So you kind of hear him impersonating The Rock and impersonating Jemaine Clement. It's like the weirdest thing. It's just the best.
I liked almost every single song in this movie to the point where I would listen to it on repeat over and over.
I honestly think it's one of their strongest soundtracks in a long time. Like, you know, like Tangled is not super musical and Frozen was more musical, but it didn't have as many big numbers and like they were kind of spread out more. And then the numbers themselves, obviously Let It Go is like a really, really big one. But this one has like multiple songs that like I just,
Well, I feel like it doesn't feel like this movie has a big one because the soundtrack is so consistently good. Like none of them feel like, all right, let's put all of our minds and resources and energy behind this one song that's going to be a big hit and it's going to be, you know, the identifying factor of this movie for the rest of its life. Every single song, one, was catchy, two, was pleasant to listen to, and three, it actually always meant something to the story. I can't think of a single song that felt like it was in there just for the sake of having a song or for being a gimmick.
Right.
I mean, maybe Shiny, but I'm not complaining.
Maybe. But I love Shiny. I'm not mad at Shiny.
I would never choose to cut that out.
Well, also, when you think about how that song is woven into the action of that scene, it's like by him singing about himself and the kind of character he is, that plays a factor into the actual mission to get back.
Right. And that's true. Right. It also paints him as a foil to the two characters, who one seems really egocentric and the other seems... That's very interesting. That's a very good point. There's just so much to love in this movie. And another thing I was really impressed by, we talked about this a little bit with Kubo and the Two Strings, is that they made a movie about the Oceanic culture, and they actually cast people from that culture to voice these characters. So instead of you have Charlie Theron and
Kubo...
Sorry.
That's just insane. Kubo. Yeah. Apparently it's fucking
Kubo
possible.
Had, like, Charlize Theron, who I loved in it, and Ralph Fiennes and Matthew McConaughey. And it was like, oh, that's kind of uncomfortable. And then you watch it here and you're like, oh, you could totally do this. Because, like, in this, they have Tamora Morrison, who is a renowned Maori actor. They have Rachel House, who is in Hunt for the Wilder People and most of Taika Waititi's movies. And she's hilarious. And she's so good in this as the grandma.
Grandma wound up being one of my favorite characters, so too. Good. And it's a character that isn't prominent throughout the whole movie, but she has some really key scenes with Moana towards the beginning. And it's one of those things where she might not be present on the adventure, but you could feel her message reverberating throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, she's the one who introduces the story by telling a story about Maui in the beginning. And then she sings this song where she talks about water, and like all of that is just so fantastic. But then, Dwayne Johnson is, I think he's Pacific Islander, if I remember correctly. And even Jemaine Clement is Maori. So, like, which is, if you don't know New Zealand, that's basically, like, their indigenous people are Maoris. The fact that they actually, like, took an eye to that. I think the only non-Polynesian or Pacific Islander voice in the main cast is Alan Tudyk, and he plays Haha, or Hey Hey.
Hey Hey.
Yes.
You are correct.
So, like,
Like, even the mom, Moana's mom is Nicole Scherzinger of the Pussycat Dolls, which is, like, the main thing people know from. So, in a lot of these cases, the casting is unexpected. Like, you can kind of imagine them being like, let's cast, like, Sophie Turner as, like, Moana or something. And, that's a thing that Hollywood would do. Kubo, Leica, just saying. So I really appreciate that they went and, you know, like, just reading about how they put this movie together, they like really worked hard to like kind of talk to people from that culture and people who know about that culture and make it as, you know, it's still like a fantasy, like it's not representative of, it's not claiming to be an accurate representation of any one culture, but they kind of did really make an effort to make this as respectful as they possibly could of the culture that it's depicting, which is a step that I really appreciate at a time when not enough movies do that.
And what I liked about it is that sometimes when Disney tries to do non-white stories, they do it in this way that's like serious and straight-faced, and they're trying to be so hard to be respectful that I think they lose some of the fun. Like, for me, Princess and the Frog is less fun because they try so hard to make sure that the first black princess is such a respected character, which is like, cool, but she's also kind of a stick in the mud because they work so hard. And it's like, even then when you look...
I watched it yesterday. I liked it.
I mean, but like, sorry, and then it's on. Like with Pocahontas and Mulan, like Pocahontas has to be so strong and stalwart and whatever. And then Mulan gets to be more fun. But then it's like when you look at the way they market these toys, they always are like so straight faced and solemn, while like every other Disney princess character is smiling really broadly. And it's like, you know, you can have them smile and it's still fine. Like that's
I mean, okay, while we're talking about this, I'd like to point out that while Moana is Disney's first Polynesian princess, she is not Disney's first Polynesian main character. That would be Lilo from Lilo and Stitch.
Word. Which actually, like, that was part of watching this reminded me of Lilo and Stitch and made me really happy because, like, a little bit of the designs were, they went with, like, fuller figures in this, which I like too because, like, I love Frozen, but like Frozen suffers a little bit from like the Baba bobblehead aesthetic that Disney's gotten really into, where like it looks like if you flick Elsa hard enough she's just gonna have to topple backward because of physics. Like, you know, Moana like looks more like a character who could really care for herself and could take on the waves, and I love that. I loved seeing all of that in effect. And I just thought this movie was amazing. It's easily one of my favorite of the year. I want to go see it again immediately.
The second that I walked out, the second that the credits rolled, I was like, can we just watch it again?
We actually thought it was starting again because there's an after credit scene, so one, stick around for that. But two, then they started playing like the music in such a way that we thought maybe they accidentally were just looping it, and we were like, should we just say it? You want to sit back down? What are we doing? Like, I would have watched it again immediately.
Before we wrap up, though, I want to give a little credit to the short that plays before.
Oh,
I'm surprised they had done that, given the fact that Inside Out is so recent and it's two very different ways of conveying similar things. But I thought that was just so brilliantly done.
I would assume that they were kind of developing at the same time and maybe kind of got too far.
Like, because doesn't it feel like Lava would have paired really well with this?
Ugh. No, because Lava doesn't pair well with anything.
Lava's garbage.
You guys are so harsh. Come on.
Lava would have bummed me out ahead of this because I'd be like, this is going to be terrible.
I'm really glad Lava could stay where it was. It's fine.
You never need to talk about it's Lava fine. Again. Here's a weird fun fact, though. We went karaokeing a few months ago in New York, and we were doing a lot of Disney karaoke, and for some reason, the song from Lava is available in New York karaoke bars because a lot of people want to sing that, I guess.
I like Lava more than most. If I was ever forced to do karaoke, the last song in the world I would ever pick is that song.
So what, we're doing that when you come in for Thanksgiving? Done.
No. I only rap, don't you know?
If you guys haven't seen her Collider rap, you definitely need to run and go do that right now.
We should put that
on. But yeah, we should wrap up. So I think it kind of sounds like we all love Moana.
Yeah.
Like, Moana.
Unreservedly love this one.
So yeah, everyone, go see Moana, go buy the soundtrack. It is wonderful. And with that, that is a wrap on episode 141 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Please go on over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We also would love it if you would go on Facebook and like us there. And then all three of us are all over the interwebs. Christy, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. It's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the interwebs, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I write for Collider.com, and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. So thank you guys so much for listening. Whenever you listen to this, I hope you are having or had a happy Thanksgiving, and we will see you next week.
So what can I say except you're welcome, for the islands I pulled from the sea.